This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And in just a bit, we're going to hear from fabled attorney Lawrence David Sledge, pride of Castor, Louisiana, who is still in the game doing other things after an unfortunate disbarment 18 years ago. He has some activities that are fascinating, especially reinventing himself at an age when some would call it a day. And we'll hear from him in short order. And later in the hour, we'll hear, as is our Thursday custom, from Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief. What a day it was at the state capitol yesterday. The first veto session since the, quote, new constitution was enacted in 1974. And the veto override session was a downer for those who concocted this idea, as the advocate from the story from Sam Carlin calls it, an embarrassing defeat for the Republican legislative majority, who convened for the session with confidence they could overpower the governor politically. Now, we're going to hear from Mark Ballard, but the governor, he not only opined about this on his radio show yesterday, he called a press conference a couple of hours later, and crowed just a bit about the transgender sports bill effort, which cleared the Senate and failed in the House by 2 votes. Got 68 votes. That's a lot of votes, but you need 70, two-thirds in both chambers, and 70 is the number in the House, and it did not make it to 70 votes. And Melinda DeLotte from the Associated Press asked the governor a probing question about whether he wheeled and dealed, as was reported, to get lawmakers, at least enough of them, to not vote to override. And here's how Governor Edwards responded.
I suspect I used all those that were at my disposal that previous governors have used and that they were using downstairs themselves. You're going to take politics out of politics? Now, I will tell you, very, very light on threats, not so light on promises. But that wasn't a choice that I made. I'm not here because I wanted to be here. This session didn't happen because I asked for it. And ask those Republicans who gave you that what was happening on their side today.
All right, that's Governor Edwards, who showed probably more emotion about this than anything he has in his 6 years in office. And we'll talk with Mark Ballard in just a bit. But it is a pleasure to catch up with L.D. Sledge. Many of us remember him, a character like few others, often dressed in a white suit, and often on television commercials with Percy Sledge. And as we know, Percy left us a few years ago after making a stop on this show shortly before his passing. But L.D. is still going, and today I think he is okay with us saying he was born on this date in 1935. So good morning and happy birthday, L.D. Sledge.
Thank you, Jim. It's so good hearing your voice. You know, it's been almost 20 years.
Well, it hasn't been that long since we've talked, but 20 years since you left Baton Rouge, right? Close to it.
Yeah, well, it was almost 20 years when I left, right? Best thing that ever happened to me to be dismounted. And I've had some really fantastic things occur. I'm enjoying life now than better than I ever had at 86. And, wow, it's just like a magical thing happened.
Living in Clearwater, Florida, aren't you?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
The spring training base for the Philadelphia Phillies, and one of the most beautiful places on the planet. So you made a good choice as far as relocating, but many of your friends miss you in Baton Rouge, where you were a presence, and you were one of the first lawyer advertisers. Did it very well, but
actually, I was the first. I was number one. Yeah, back golly, I don't know what year, 79 or something like that. There was the old O'Keefe, I've forgotten what decision came out of the Supreme Court that allowed advertising. And I put a thing in the phone directory that was just a bunch of books on a shelf. And I got complaints from people about advertising. And then later they became the biggest advertisers of all. Anyway, yeah, Percy and I had a great relationship with he and his family. And I just regret losing him. He was quite a man.
Well, we're going to talk primarily about what's going on in your world right now, but I think for those unfamiliar, you were disbarred for something that some others have been disbarred for, using non-lawyers to do some lawyer work. But most of these other guys, maybe even a few girls, ladies, they've been given their ticket back, but they didn't give you your ticket back.
The committee, I was going to get it back, but I was never going to go back into the practice. I just wanted to put the paper back on the wall again. It would open some doors that had been closed. And the committee said I could get my license back. And then when it went up to the Supreme Court, Kitty Kimball, who was originally the judge who ruled against me, stamp denied without giving any reason. And so, you know, I said, okay, well, I've got to take a real different look at life. And I have. I've become an artist. I play piano for nursing homes and for different restaurants and so on. I have written probably 3 million words in print. I've been a ghostwriter for dozens of people. And I learned that I could paint. It's all in the aesthetic department, which law is not.
Well, you're definitely getting in touch with your right brain functions, and I am a Facebook friend of L.D. Sledge, and I can tell you his painting is very good. He has immense talent. I know also he wrote two exceptionally good books, one which got some critical acclaim, Dawn's Revenge, but another one that was underrated, Command Influence. So he is a Renaissance man, and this happened 18 years ago. I mentioned how Edwin Edwards, who we lost not so long ago, reinvented himself and took it about as well as he could when he was sent to jail at 75 for what turned out to be 8.5 years. You were disbarred when you were, I think, 68 years old. So some people would say, well, geez, this is the end of the trail for me. What kept you going?
I don't know. You see, I just always had an ambition to do something. And I think someone said, if you can live as long as you have something to do and a reason to do it. And I had a reason to do it, and I still haven't totally figured that out. But it's like, you know, I learned one thing about two or three things that I found that are very valuable. But one thing I found about me as to, you know, most people have a basic purpose in life, but they never find out what it is. And they kind of stumble along in their lives and try to live a happy life. And they don't know what they're doing. They just go to work and they hopefully they can retire and go play golf or something, which is so stupid. But anyway, I learned that what I do best, is I reach out and touch people, and I give them a good moment or a good hour or a good day. I may say something that might change their lives, but at least I leave them smiling, you know. And it doesn't matter who it is, the gal at the cash register or some guy on the street or whatever, as long as he stopped long enough, I'll talk to him if he's able to talk. But most of the people are kind of off out in another world.
Well, people talk about toughness, and there's physical toughness, but when it comes to mental toughness, this man, he is the guy, and I don't think he would mind me saying, and it has been a while since we've talked about personal matters, but he lost his son tragically. He had a marriage that ended, and parents that died all at about the same time he was disbarred, and he kept it together and reinvented himself. And we're going to spend a few more minutes with the remarkable L.D. Sledge on his 86th birthday. 877-217-5757 is your number. Randy and Zachary. Randy, good morning. You're on Talk to Museum.
Yes, Mr. Sledge, you know someone that used to be your client many years ago, Charles Fridley.
All right.
Oh, Charles Fridley? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is this Charles?
No, it's Randy and Zachary. He must be a friend of Charles.
Yeah, well, Charles is quite a character. I loved him, yeah.
Well, you've had a few characters as clients, including yours truly. And LD, I must say, was an underrated lawyer. That's one of the problems, though. When you go on television,
some people think you're a buffoon, but I found out you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, well, you have to. You know, the thing is that it's like I think some of the smartest people around hire smart people. And that's why they get money. That's why they get rich. They got people that know what they're doing.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with LD. Good morning, Dan.
Morning. LD, this is Dan Sherman. I just wanted to call and say hello and glad to hear things are going good for you. I still appreciate all those employment discrimination cases you referred to me over the years.
Thank you, Dan. Love talking to you. Thank you.
We're going to spend a few more minutes with LD Sledge. He came to LSU, by the way. He's 86 years old. This must have been like 1957, right on the brink of Billy Cannon's heroics. And he was a kid from a small town, and people knew early on that he would do well. We'll be back with him. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. And stopping by in studio on late notice at my request, Steve Crump. Remember him? 36 years he was the guy in charge at the Unitarian Church. It's a pleasure to see Steve again. This is Old Home Week. A few more minutes with Lawrence David L.D. Sledge. Steve Wenham writes, I enjoyed his book Dawn's Revenge very much. Do you still do original writing, L.D.? L.D. Sledge, can you hear me, my friend?
I can hear that great voice. Yes, sir.
So do you do original writing now, as Steve asks? Are there any more Dawn's Revenges in the offing?
Well, just one second before I tell you that. You mentioned Billy Cannon. I saw that run. We were up there in the stadium that day, and somebody said, look at that! And he was just kept going. He didn't stop. That was a heck of a run. Anyway, yeah, I'm the ghostwriter. I've probably written, golly, I've had 20 different clients that had a variety of subject matters, from one being a monk, a Tibetan monk, to an Israeli who was raised in Israel from 1933 all the way to now, two or three doctors. All of these are ghost-written books. My name is not on one. I wrote one called The Death of American Healthcare just recently for another doctor.
All right. Then another listener asks if the rumor is true that you have written a cookbook. Have you gotten into that realm as well?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What am I talking about? Look, that's a book right now that's about to come out on the market. This is a 200-page cookbook, but it's more than that. Smiley Anders wrote a beautiful accolade for it. It's on the back page of the book, and it'll be on the market on Amazon in about like maybe 2 weeks. But half of that book is about the history of the Cajun people, whom I love, and it talks about them, how they were exiled out of Canada, how they established their lives here, and all the trouble they've had, and how wonderful that they've been able to maintain their sense of humor.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with LD Sledge. Michael in River Bend. Michael, you're on with Mr. Sledge.
Hey, LD, how you doing?
What's your question, Michael?
Well, I was wondering if he's still trying to get, seniors like himself not to get the vaccine, or if he's got vaccinated since the coronavirus pandemic.
All right. Have you been vaccinated, LD Sledge?
No, I'm not going to either.
Okay. Well, that's a personal decision. I would advise you to do it, but it's your business. Another listener, obviously some people know what you're doing, even though you've been away a while, asked to hear your story about your cancer recovery.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I got cancer of the throat back in 2014. I went to MD Anderson. I had proton radiation, a little chemo, but proton radiation is where they have a very pinpointed type power that goes in and shoots a squirrel, not just the neighborhood, and they got rid of it, and it's been like 7 years.
Well, you're an amazing survivor. There is no doubt. And another listener notes about you coming to LSU from Castor, which, by the way, is also the hometown of one Lod Cook. When you came, Country Boy Comes to Town, how was that experience?
Well, I'll tell you what, I was a very naive country boy at 17 when I hit LSU, and I was the only one down there from my part of the country. And I don't know whether another man ever went to college out of my high school that I know of, maybe one. Lud Cook, I talked to Lud, him one time, and yeah, he's quite a guy. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it was different being a country boy.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, hopefully we will not go as long with refraining from talking to you, but another listener asks about your art, wants to take a look at it. Best place to go and take a peek at LD Sledge the Artist is where?
You can go to www.best. Okay, it's best canvas art. No, best canvas fine art prints. Etsy.com. I have about 40 pieces on there.
All right, best canvas fine art prints.
.com at Etsy but you can find it on Etsy under my name or best canvas art prints.
All right, LD Sledge, great to catch up with you. Let's do it again, and happy birthday to you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. And I just love being able to talk to my friends back again. Okay,
very
man.
Good. Very good. And speaking of a comeback, it's been a few years since he was at our microphone, and hopefully he'll be back soon, too. But for a brief period today is the incomparable Steve Crump, 36 years pastor at the Unitarian Church on Goodwood Boulevard in Baton Rouge. And yesterday I heard from Steve, Reverend Crump. He came out of the woodwork. He was hopping mad over Gene Mills, who came on this show yesterday and was denouncing transgender athletes and certainly was a proponent of the legislation that failed. Your thoughts about why this was such a big issue. What propels people to make this the major issue of a legislative session? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I know, many of your listeners know. By the way, good morning to you, Jim. It's a good morning in the state of Louisiana, by the way, because we're not exporting buffoonery and a whole bunch of farce, although it cost the state of Louisiana millions of dollars for that override exercise in freedom and independence. They should have all gone down to the gym. They would have saved you and me a whole bunch of money.
And they would have been in better shape.
They would have been in better shape, and their opponent, the governor, is now stronger this morning, and he has a right to celebrate, and he ought to be. But I would add to what the governor said, it was not only futile, harmful, and mean-spirited, it was also prurient. Look that word up in the dictionary. Your listeners know what that word means. It's prurient. It's just an overindulgence in sexuality. And I think a bunch of those folk who got all steamed up about transgender laws ought to have talked to transgender families or talked to transgender people. You know, intersex people probably represent about 2% of the population. And anyway, back to
lawmakers thought they could make hay in the sunshine on this. And
of course
they did. Some of them probably raising some money.
Oh, of course. That's what it's about. That's what it's about. And you know, Pastor Mills, fine person, but he's more than a pastor. I'm not a lobbyist. He is. And so that's what we ought to also say.
Yeah, he actually has a scorecard.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, now that you got some time on your hands, why don't you have a scorecard?
There we go. There we go. It will be the Mills and Crump show. I think he'll take top.
I think we ought to get you and Maxine Crump together, and we'd have Crump and Crump.
Well, she's my sister, and she says I'm her brother. What, you know, and I'm trying to live up to that fame.
The Crump scorecard. I like this.
Yeah, it could be a morning talk show too.
It could.
Could. Or a weather show. Yes.
It could be.
But seriously, we ought not to be exporting retrograde politics, and that's what's going on in Texas and in other places. And we ought not to be exporting and promoting retrograde religion. We ought to be talking about progressive side of Christianity, and that's what, of course, Mills has rarely done.
The governor said this was a mean piece of legislation.
No, he's right. He's absolutely right. because it harmed families and harmed kids.
And it could have taken some serious business away from the state of Louisiana.
Well, along with saying praise to God and a few legislators who did the right thing, I praise the Morning Advocate and more money to them for investigative journalism, and praise to the Chamber of Commerce. How would you have enjoyed going to work today had all those bills been overridden? It would have been hard to do business in the state of Louisiana and Baton Rouge and other cities, and especially New Orleans.
Well,
absolutely.
The Baton Rouge Chamber has been progressive in some ways.
Absolutely.
Supporting the tolerance resolution, which is yet to pass the Metro Council, for example.
That's right.
But
it will one day.
LABI, most of these lawmakers are in good stead. The ones who were responsible for this veto session with LABI.
Down with retrograde politics and exporting retrograde politics and religion. That's
877-217-5757 is your number. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and in just a few moments, we will hear from Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, newspaper of record in Louisiana. And today, The Advocate, in its editorial page, is on its major page, Victory for Louisiana and Rejection of Transgender Athletics Bill and Wise Move to Block Reckless Gun Rights Bill. With us for a few more moments is Steve Crump, the longtime pastor of the Unitarian Church in Baton Rouge, still active in his way. Still looks like he's got some gas in the tank, lots of it. And if you'd like to get in under the wire with Reverend Crump, 877-217-5757. Jim and Walker.
Good morning, gentlemen. The Republican Party is just based on hate and fear of others. They started off trying to legislate all of our bedrooms, and they lost. Then they moved on trying to legislate gay marriage, and they lost. And they needed something new to hate.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went with Black Lives Matters, and they went with trans kids. And that's just their latest target. Mm-hmm. And there will be other targets to come. It is just the way the party works, and it's awful.
Some would disagree, of course, but others are saying amen, and Steve Crump, I suspect, is one of those who agrees with Jim and Walker.
I would say factions of the grand old party need to demonstrate mental, spiritual, and physical hygiene. Think about that. Mental, spiritual, and physical hygiene. I mean, Majority Whip just discovered the vaccine just a few days ago. I mean, I don't know. I hope he didn't spend any taxpayer dollars.
Steve Scalise? But you probably, I'm relatively sure that you had Republicans in your congregation at the Unitarian Church. Not all of those people are bad people.
Well, of course not. There are factions of the grand old party that are waiting. The clock is ticking, you know? I mean, would presidents of the past in that party been elected today? Not today.
Well, it's a different party, but so is the Democratic Party, which
sure
used to be the party of segregation.
Of course. There's political realignment going on again now, right? And I can't actually put a pinpoint date on it. It could have been 2000. It could have been the Reagan years. But it's been moving slowly but surely. And many mm-hmm. of your guests have said the reason we had the last president, the former president, was because we had his predecessor,
mm-hmm.
right?
A listener asks, and I think it's a rhetorical question, but if we'd had Governor Rasponi, we would have these bills in law in Louisiana right now.
I think you're right. Having met both of those candidates, I think you're right.
And if we have a new governor, which we will, we're going to have a new governor.
One
it's
day.
Just a question of it won't be that far away. So who knows what will happen 3 years from now, but we're going to follow it, and we're glad Steve Crump's on the horizon, still in the game. And another listener says that the show should not be Crump and Crump, although Maxine and Steve would be a good pair, but how about Trump and Crump?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
You'd take him on any place, anytime, anywhere, like George Eames, right?
I think little by little, the corporations of Louisiana and certainly money managers, and we see this throughout our nation, and little by little, political leaders will be taking on ESG and their governance. you know, environmental, social, and governance in their leadership. And that's what Louisiana needs to do, rather than importing, rather than despoiliating the earth and the air. I mean, we don't want to start more coal plants. Do we really want to do that? And so that's what's happening in the new leadership of corporations. We can see that coming.
Well, Steve Crump, thanks for stopping in, and let's keep it going. Let's talk again sometime very soon.
Thank you, Jim. And it could be the caffeine speaking today. Who knows?
For both of us. Mark Ballard is with us, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, and he had a front row view of what happened. And Mark, it turned out to be much ado about nothing. Your ace reporter, Sam Carlin, puts it in the Advocate today that this was an embarrassment for the Republican legislative majority. They convened, costing state taxpayers lots of money, and came up empty-handed. And the governor, by his own admission, had to twist some arms. How colossal was the battle at the Capitol?
Well, it was very colossal, and Sam had the support of a lot of reporters and editors, for that matter, in putting all that together. But it was a colossal fight, and in the end, they were two votes shy, and so each side yesterday morning at this time was telling all of us, "Oh, we've got enough. 100%, we're going to win," said the Republicans, and nope, they don't have enough, was what the Democrats were saying. And then when we got down to it, because it really is all about the math, they came up two votes shy.
Were they shocked?
It was dramatic, but I think by the time they took the vote, that both sides knew where everything was going to be. You know, so, I didn't see a whole lot of, oh my gosh, how in the world could that have happened kind of thing. I think by the time that they actually cast the ballots, that they knew who was going to win and who was going to lose.
Were there any surprising moves away from this transgender legislation?
No, not really. When you look at basically there was a 10-vote spread between what happened in May when 78 of those House members voted for, which would have been 8 more than is necessary to override, mm-hmm. and then what happened. And basically you had 3 who voted for it in May. They didn't vote this time around. And then you had, let me see if I get my math right. I'm a public school student. So 6 Democrats and 1 no party flipped from being for it in May to being against the override yesterday.
I think the only,
it's the math.
The only Democrat who held firm was Francis Thompson, voting for a ban on transgender athletes, the longest serving member of the legislature and a Democrat. The vote, as you point out,
in a district that is overwhelmingly Trump supporting.
That is true. But at some point, Francis can't hang on forever. At some point, he should vote his conscience. But he may believe this was a good piece of legislation. He probably does.
In my talks with him, I think he believes that this is an issue and needs to be dealt with.
All right. But you note the vote was 78-19 on May 27th. A listener, this is Tom on Bluebonnet. He asks, why was the vote 68-30 this time? That's because Representatives Carter, Carpenter, Cox, Glover, Marino, and White did not vote. And by not voting, they essentially were voting to help the governor.
Right. Right. And you were looking, and Marino and Melinda White are no party. Wilford Carter Sr. and Barbara Carpenter are Democrats. But Ms. Carpenter voted against it in May as well.
So. Okay. But 6 did not vote, which is curious because it was a huge vote. And I would think that it took a long time to have a veto override session. It is an embarrassment. You just don't come back to the Capitol without some sort of indication that you're going to get something done. And they walked away with nothing done.
Absolutely nothing. Yes. And that says a lot about the factionalization within the legislative branch between the Senate and in the House. There are factions of Republicans moderate to more conservative to more practical to hold the lines, and they can't seem to gather them all together into one group. However, most of the Republicans, these were votes along party lines, and so the break that we saw was Patrick Connick, and it kind of touches into what your previous guests were talking about, and that was he basically was attacked by and his family was vilified by hate mail over the gun the concealed carry bill, and he stood up and said, "I'm not going to, you know, I voted for transgender because that's what my my constituents want, and I'm going to vote against concealed carry because these people have, you know, attacked me in vile terms and my family in vile terms, and I'm not going to vote to override anything else," which virtually meant that was the end right there. You know, that transgender was the only one. They needed Patrick Connick in the Senate to get enough votes to override the veto, and he just said, "That's it. I'm not going to override anything else."
That one got 23 votes, the gun bill in the Senate. It needed 26 to override the governor's veto, right. So it really was not a particularly close vote. And Hal in Monroe says, why didn't they try on any of the other 26 vetoes? They could have gone to the well over and over, but they chose not to, Mark.
Well, that is, you know, I think that was a strategic decision. They knew that transgender was the one that had the most likelihood of passage, as it did in the Senate. And so they skipped over, I think, about 20 House-originated bills to get to the transgender, which had passed the Senate and gotten to the House. And I think the strategic decision is, I mean, do you just want to quit and go down knowing that you're going to lose, or do you want to strike out repeatedly? And that was a big fight, too, over the last the 2 hours between the defeat of the transgender sports override and when they actually adjourned. There was many people, many representatives that were saying, let's take each one of them. Let's go. And even if the House overrode one of those bills, remember, when it gets back to the Senate, they no longer have the 26 votes to do the override. So at some point, more practical people said, let's just go home.
Well, we're going to take a short break. It is that time, and spend the last quarter hour with Mark Ballard. If you'd like to get in, we invite your participation. We'll take a call or two or a few. 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're back with the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Advocate after this quick pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief of the Advocate, is with us for the remainder of the hour. Your number is 877-217-5757. Bill Roundtree calling from Webb Park. Bill, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning, Jim? And well, enjoying the show. It was great to hear Steve Crump and his positive message that he had to deliver. And I just have a question. And my question is there any true estimates on how much money was wasted by this veto session?
All right. What about the cost? Thank you, Bill. Mark?
Well, that is something we were asking about to get the exact cost. But you're looking at about $25,000 to $30,000 a day. And those are, you know, when you bring in the mileage and the expenses and the per diem and all of that sort of thing that has to go along with it. They still get their pay anyway, whether they came or not. So that's the kind of guesstimate that we have right now, but we still have to figure out, and they're still calculating it, and we'll have those numbers. So I'm sure it's going to be in the mid six figures, because you also have to include staffers, increased police presence. They have to be kind of taken care of. And then it's not just the 2 days that they were in, but the day before and sometimes the day after. In this case, it'll be the day after for some of the lawmakers.
Henry at the Country Club. Hi, Henry. You're on with Mark Ballard.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Mark. Good to see both y'all fellas survive the session. I've got a question brought up by yesterday's show. The Reverend Theo Gene Mills was on there. He claims to be a 501c3, a charitable organization. But like Mr. Jim said a little bit earlier, he's out there with a scorecard lobbying and getting paid at least $111,741.
All right. I don't know what happened to your phone there, but Henry, you made your point. What about, thanks for calling too. That's an age-old question. Is the Family Forum really a nonprofit, and should they be lobbying lawmakers and keeping a scorecard, Mark?
Well, the Reverend Gene Mills has been doing this for some time, and he always argues to me that he's bipartisan. However, I've rarely seen him lobbying for Democratic issues. And I don't know what the actual law is. I'm presuming that they are nonprofit. And whenever I took a look at their 99-1, their Internal Revenue Service forms that they have to file every year, they are, you know, nonprofit. But then that brings up an entire question of whether an advocacy group should be a nonprofit, and there are plenty of them out there. So it's not just the Family Forum.
Well, there aren't as many journalists these days to cover these kinds of things, and the Advocate's doing a great job with a much reduced staff. And a story that a few listeners have asked me to ask you about, this is a head of the Metro section. Ford Foundation donates $1 million to Advocate to expand the investigative journalism team. That's a good one.
That is a good one, and something to be very proud of. I mean, it's I think 3 years, but that it's to be able to pay for additional reporters and additional work. And I think that that is what local journalism is all about, and that's what the newspaper industry has been suffering the most for over the past few years, is that they just don't have the resources to do the kind of investigative work into state and local governments, and this certainly will help out.
And you've done a remarkable job with a reduced staff. Andrea Gallo in particular has been on the trail of two stories, the Jeff Landry story, which seems to have new layers on a regular basis, and the LSU story, which, as we know, is still a work in progress. And she is one of several reporters who are doing great work, but I did want to single her out. And when it comes to investigative work over the last year, she has certainly earned her spurs, Mark.
She certainly has, and she is one of our better investigative reporters. So it's a reason to subscribe to The Advocate.
It is, and of course, when it comes to sports, I'm the president of Tiger Rag. We cover LSU sports, and here's Jason chiding me, and I guess by extension everybody else, at least I hope everybody else who covers LSU sports. And this is a good point. I hadn't even thought about it. But is it an ethics violation for Coach O to have his son on his staff? And his son, one of his sons, is on the staff. I know he earns $75,000 a year as an analyst. And Jason, I think you may be right. Based on what I know, that would be an ethics violation, Mark.
On the staff of Tiger Rag?
No, on the staff of the LSU football team.
Oh, on the staff. Yeah, well, I believe that he got a waiver for that, an ethics waiver. But that is an issue.
When you're when you go 15-0, those waivers tend to be a little more a little more plentiful. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Mark. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Good morning, Mark. The other day, Beth Mizell was quoted. We know that politicians lie, but listen to this quote. Without protection, women's sports would not exist. That is false. That is a lie. That's just like Gene Mills, other political clerics, using fear and scare tactics. It's kind of surprising that Gene Mills didn't claim that if the veto was not overridden, that the locust would invade this state and eat up all the crops. Why do people like Mizell have... This is such a passionate... polarizing issue. It's a, as someone obviously said a million times, it's a a cause, a bill looking for a cause. Well, here's my question, Jim. Next year, in April of 2022, New Orleans is going to host, probably, hopefully, the Final Four. Once that threat of the NCAA canceling that event, don't you think there'll be another effort to try to get this women's sports bill passed, Jim?
All right. Well, Mark, I don't know. I don't think they want to be embarrassed again, but you never know about these things.
Well, what I have found, and I must have more tolerance for over-the-top political rhetoric than the caller does. But what I've noticed and what I think will happen is that, you know, there may be another stab at it, but after a year or two, they will move on to a different subject. Remember that this transgender issue was brought up by the National Republicans and pushed upon the state legislators to try to energize their base for the 2022 elections, and so they move on to something else. Remember also that we're up for the Super Bowl, which the NFL also has taken a similar position on discrimination against transgender and LGBTQ community. Right. So.
Craig in Natchitoches. Thank you, James. Craig, you're on with Mark.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. A little bit on what James was talking about with the business aspect of the situation. I was curious, and I haven't heard anything. Where did Lobby stand on this transgender bill? After all, they're supposed to be pro-business, but they're also pro-Republican. I kind of feel like they were...
I'm sorry?
Looks like he dropped off.
Yeah, dropped off. But
well, I can jump in on that, though, is that Lobby pretty much stood in the closet on this, and they ducked phone calls. They did not want to be involved in this in any way, as opposed to GNO, the New Orleans version, which jumped right out front and said, you know, we're against this, stop it now. And there was a number of business community officials who independently were lobbying the lawmakers on this, because when you look at the, I guess the top 500 companies, and I mean the largest companies in the world, all were against this bill. And but Lobby kept under the rug and did not speak. I didn't see them there, and they never commented on it. Never returned calls.
Well. They talk about a lot of other things, but didn't want to get involved in this, apparently.
Well, wanted to avoid getting involved in, you know, coming out on a statement like this. Their president, Stephen Wagasback, has made statements about, you know, we need to focus on business issues, you know, and we need to focus on finances, we need to focus on taxes.
Well, Mark, if you were hiring a reporter, as you often do at The Advocate, you generally look for somebody with reporting experience, and it's amazing. LABI has a gentleman in charge, nice guy, but he's never run a business, and he's head of the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry. That seems to be a bit of a disconnect.
Well, he's a lobbyist, though. Let's say Their essential reason to be is to lobby the legislature, and in that Stephen Wagasback is a superstar in that. He's done it through he basically was handling most of Governor Jindal's lobbying efforts very successfully.
He is exceptional at that. There is no doubt, and that's a big part of the job. And he's done an amazing job of keeping the minimum wage at $7.25 an hour. He could take credit for that, but he doesn't. But that's basically Stephen Wagasback, who has made the state keep its minimum wage at the federal level of $7.25.
He's had a lot of help with that, though. A lot of the business community do not want to see this.
They don't want to see it, but most businesses don't have employees working at that amount. And I doubt that the world would end if we went to $11 an hour as the great state of Arkansas has. But, Mark, that's a topic for another day. It's always a pleasure to get your insights. Let's do it again next Thursday if you're available, and I hope you are. Thanks, Mark.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. And Talk Louisiana's signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay safe and stay tuned.